to Eye on Horror, the official podcast of iHorror.com. This is episode 51, which I think is season 3, episode 15. Someone call me on it if I'm wrong. I am your host, James J. Edwards, and with me, as always, is your other host, Jacob Davison. How you doing, Jacob?
Doing well, and always happy to be back.
Always happy? You're still always happy? Even after 50 episodes?
Yeah, you know, just it gives me something to do.
that's true. Also with us is your other host, John Correa. How you doing, Correa?
Doing great. This podcast is the one thing that's keeping me going. No, there's a bunch of things keeping me going. But it's helped. It's not only a thing to do, but it's a thing to work on, which is nice. Work's ramping up, though, so I'm happy to be working again in this new world of doing pre-production at home, which I can't tell if I'm being more productive or less productive, but I'm getting stuff done, so I guess it's fine either way.
My work is totally ramping up like hardcore. I mean, you guys know that because I'm the difficult one to schedule for these, but yeah. Anyway, enough about that. What'd you guys see? What's been going on?
Well, as you know, I've been going to the drive-in a lot lately.
Yeah.
Specifically, the events hosted by American Cinematheque and Beyond Fest. They did some pretty fun screenings recently. Like, just last week, they were doing a double feature of Chuck Russell's The Blob and David Cronenberg's The Fly remake. So that was a pretty messed up night.
Two of the best remakes of the 80s.
Yeah, and I missed out on tickets for that.
Although me and Jonathan did get to see each other in person for Manhunter and Silence of the Lambs 2 weeks ago.
10 feet apart. We did not get close to each other. I was in the bed of a truck drinking a Truly. He was on the ground. We were social distancing. But yes, Manhunter, Silence of the Lambs on the big screen. Man, wow. I've never seen either film on the big screen, and seeing Manhunter especially was just like, I love Silence of the Lambs, but Manhunter on the big screen was such a fun ride,
especially at the drive-in.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that movie screams drive-in.
It was also really funny because go figure. I went with my friends and we set up chairs in the back, truck bed of his truck. And, go figure, we get the person who probably had never been to a drive-in before to park next to us, because for the first like 10 or 15 minutes they had their beams on and they kept shutting their engine on and off, and eventually like my friends were getting pissed and I'm just laughing my ass off at this, and they're like, why are you laughing? I'm like, oh, I'm taking a drink every time they turn their engine on and every time they shut it off. So we had a good time.
I hope you weren't driving.
No. I was not.
Because it sounds like you left nice and toasty.
I was good. I was a good boy. You know, also it was two movies that were both like 2 hours long. So definitely had time to like even out by the end. But still, yeah, no, I wasn't driving.
But either way, you know, the Beyond Fest screenings have been a lot of fun, and they haven't announced what they're doing next. There isn't a screening this week, but they did say they're going to have some stuff planned soon. So, you know, it's sad with COVID and everything. We aren't getting a traditional Beyond Fest, but it does sound like they're going to try and do something or another going into October, either for Halloween stuff or for Beyond Fest stuff. So, you know, keep my eyes peeled.
Yeah. And I mean, Mission Tiki has Tenet now, so at least there's something to watch there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I was really hoping for a double feature of Unhinged and Tenet, but it looks like they're just doing single screenings of Tenet right now.
Yeah, it is 2.5 hours long.
But still, I want more bang for my buck.
Have either of you guys watched The Babysitter Killer Queen yet on Netflix? I watched it last night. It's pretty much what you expect. It is even sillier than the first, The Babysitter,
wow,
if you can believe that. It is just gooey, splattery. I mean, it's McG, you know, and he's embracing his McG-ness on this one. I mean, it goes kind of Evil Dead in a couple places just with how campy it is. But it's
It's a pretty crazy guitar. I literally laughed out loud for probably a half dozen times. I was and I was on my couch by myself. I mean, it wasn't a communal thing, but I was cracking up just watching it by myself. It's pretty fun. It's a pretty fun movie. But yeah, I mean, you know what you're going into with the Babysitter movies.
Is Samara Weaving back? Because like that was the only part that I liked about the first one.
Yes, she is, and it's a little bit of a spoiler that she is, but she is like top billed on IMDb. So, but everybody from the first movie is back. Like all of her satanic cohorts, like Bella Thorne and Shirtless Guy,
Robbie Amell,
they're all back, and they all died. So, I mean, that tells you what you're up against with, you know, the Babysitter Killer Queen, and of course, because Mick G's about as subtle as Ed Wood, the Queen song Killer Queen is in the movie. Because
of course,
why would you name your movie that and not use the song?
Mick G's just one of those filmmakers that like just doesn't do it for me.
Oh, I thought you were going to say just doesn't give a fuck. And I'm like, oh, you're right. But it doesn't do. He has an aesthetic. It's, you know, he's not making masterpieces, and I don't think he's trying to, you know. I think he wants to make movies like The Babysitter Killer Queen.
Now, I did take, James, your suggestion of watching Sputnik.
Did you love it or did you love it?
I absolutely loved it. It was...
Ah, yes.
It was everything I wanted, but didn't know I wanted from it. Because, like, your description is pretty good about it kind of being like... It could be a continuation of Life, or it could be like what Alien 3 promised, you know. But it was its own, and like, yeah, those ingredients are there, right? That structure is a bit there, that inspiration is definitely there, but my god, no, it was totally different. It was so cool what they did with like the alien, and what they did with like, because I love government cover-up stuff, and like this one was just like back and forth with who's covering up what and what is being kept from who, and like, man, and it's just so beautifully shot, like, oh, like just,
and you don't know who's the hero in that movie. I mean, you know that the psychologist, the girl, that psychologist who is brought in, she is of course the hero, but the other, you know, is the alien the antagonist? Is the cosmonaut the antagonist? Is that colonel guy the antagonist? You don't know. Yeah. Because everybody, it just shifts so much. Oh, I loved it. Yeah. It's still my favorite movie of the year so far. I mean, we haven't hit Oscar season yet, but...
Yeah, I was about to say, come Oscar season, it's going to be great seeing that go against Bill and Ted Face the Music. Like, we have.
Well, I think because so many things are getting pushed into next year, The Invisible Man is a pretty good chance of taking home some statues this year.
I think Bill and Ted. I think this is the year for Bill and Ted to win an Oscar.
Sonic the Hedgehog, I'm giving it all to Sonic.
Honestly.
What if Keanu Reeves, his Oscar is for Bill and Ted Face the Music?
That would be incredible.
Well earned.
I still say I think it's I that movie made me regret ever making fun of Keanu Reeves' English accent, because it's just utilized so perfectly in that movie.
I saw this movie, it's from IFC Midnight, and I think it opened this weekend, so maybe some of the listeners have even seen it. Rent-A-Pal. Have you guys heard about this?
Oh yeah, yeah, with Will Wheaton.
Yeah, it's about this dude who's he lives in his mother's basement, and she's elderly with dementia, so he takes care of her. And he's really lonely, of course, because he's like this middle-aged man who lives in his mother's basement. So he tries video dating, and he doesn't have any luck with that. But he sees, when he's at his video dating, but it takes place in, I think it takes place in 1990, but it feels like it's in the 80s, because the mom's house is like this, one of those old lady museum kind of things, and the it has like tube TVs and top load VCRs, and you know, that technology is all over the place in it. But he finds this tape called Rent-A-Pal, and he takes it home, puts it in, and it's basically Will Wheaton on a videotape, and he's talking to him and gives him space to answer. So it's like you rented a pal, it's like you rented a friend on this videotape. But then some of the things that Will Wheaton starts saying, it's almost like, okay, wait, he can hear him. But then you're like, but no, these answers are generic enough that he might just be answering him. You know, he might just be pretending. And it really gets you to start thinking, you're like, okay, wait, is this guy crazy? Or is Will Wheaton's, you know, videotape character really sentient. It's a pretty crazy movie, and it does at about the halfway point, a little more than that, it takes a sharp turn into Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer territory. I mean, it gets really dark, but it's a crazy, and I mean, IFC is killing it this year. I mean, I'm so glad that have not just pushed their releases. They're releasing, I think they've had a release every week, and they've been more good than bad. And some of them are incredible. I mean, Swallow was IFC. The Wretched was IFC. I mean, Sputnik was IFC, actually. Yeah, they're killing it.
It's kind of a catch 22 because it sucks that like they haven't had like normal distribution, but like also, because of what they're doing and embracing the drive-in and stuff, they've been having like a really good like kickback year for stuff. So I mean, it's pretty awesome.
There was a stretch between True History of the Kelly Gang and The Wretched. I mean, there was a stretch of probably 6 weeks when an IFC movie won the national box office just because they were releasing stuff into drive-ins, and that's all that was open.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
And I'm excited to finally be able to watch Antebellum. I'm sad that it won't be in, I won't be able to see it in a theater, but I'm glad that it's at least going to home video and should be going to drive-ins. If it plays at a drive-in, I definitely want to see it on a big screen. But did you guys hear they also are delaying Candyman to next year?
Oh yeah, I heard.
That always rubbed me the wrong way, how they were like, oh, we're gonna delay Halloween a full year so that, you know, everything's good and safe and everyone can be in a theater to watch it, but then they're like, but we're gonna keep Candyman this year. It's like, really should be delaying that one too, if that's your reasoning for delaying Halloween, you know?
I'm of mixed mind about A Quiet Place 2, because the best part of A Quiet Place to me was seeing it in a theater.
Yeah.
With, you know, a packed theater, everybody dead silent, afraid to chomp their popcorn because it was so quiet. So I really want to see it, not even a drive-in. I want to see it in a theater, and a full theater. But I also really want to see it. And it kills me because there are actually, they did a couple of critic screenings. So there are critics on Twitter who will talk about having seen A Quiet Place 2, and they're not me. And I'm dying because I really want to see it, and I want to see it in a theater. And I don't think, I have a feeling that that unless I want to wait until 2022, it's going to have to be VOD, which will blow, but that won't be optimal. But at this point, I'm kind of shifting my thought to, I kind of hope they do it VOD just so I can see it.
Yeah, and again, this is why I'm glad that at least we got the drive-in for a bunch of these things. Shudder actually just got one of my favorite kind of underrated and like kind of out there horror movies that hasn't really been available for a long time. Fade to Black. Have you guys seen that yet on Shudder?
No, but it's on my watch list.
I haven't watched it on Shudder, but I saw it years ago. I love Fade to Black.
It stars Dennis Christopher as like this as this young guy who you know, his life is crap. He lives with like his abusive aunt, and he works at a like a film storage facility or something, where like he just gets hounded on by his boss and his coworkers. And he's a film fanatic. Like, he watches movies on like an old time projector, and he's got all these props around his house. Eventually he starts to get pushed a bit over the edge, and goes crazy, but he does it all with like a film motif of like other characters. Like, he's a master of disguise. Like, he dresses up as Dracula at one point. He dresses up as
a cowboy,
and yeah. So he's just got these very elaborate kind of film based like kill scenes. So it's pretty interesting, and it is, and oddly there've been a lot of comparisons to Joker. You know, it's basically the cinephile's Taxi Driver.
Yep. What else has been going on this week?
Well, I've just been catching up on Blu-rays I haven't watched yet, and I got to say, have you guys ever seen The Wave, Norway's first disaster movie?
Yes.
Not exactly horror, but holy shit. Like, I read reviews when it first came out and how they said that it was like, structurally, it was like every other disaster movie ever made. And it is, pretty much. You know, it fits that formula so well.
Tense.
But they did such a good, like, dude, when the rock slide happens, my jaw dropped. And then, like, for the next 10 minutes, my heart was racing. I turned to Lindsay, and Lindsay's like, my pits are sweating. Like, this is having a physical effect on how anxious, intense this is. And, oh, my God. Like, I'm not going to talk about it too long because it's not horror. It's been out for a while. It's on Tubi. It's on Hulu. But The Wave, holy shit, was that phenomenal.
It's one of those movies where you look at it and you're like, this could really happen. I mean, if you lived in a place like that, you know, you're like, this could happen. Because the wave, it's in a specific geographical place where, you know, that shit could go. I mean, it's not like volcano where you have a volcano under LA. I mean, this is like, you know, you're like, holy shit, there's science to this.
But it's also not a disaster that has happened. They even say, like, at the end, like, this hasn't happened yet, but it can at any moment, and it's going to. Like, it's not like this is a hypothetical. Like, all the research shows that this is going to happen. We just don't know when. And it's like, yeah, I know. And then Lindsay made a smart ass comment being like, oh, man, that must suck living in an area where a big disaster might happen. And I just turned out and was like, motherfucker, we live in L.A. Like, we're right on the San Andreas fault line. And she's like,
earthquake movies have there been?
Oh, and how many earthquakes have I experienced?
Yeah, we don't need the movie.
I've slept through most of them, though.
All right. So if we have nothing else new going on, let's bring on our guest. Welcome, Benji Carver. Is that how you say it? Carver?
It is. It's not Carter or Mr. Kava. Well, that's how my grandpa would say it. Joe Kava here from Maine, Milo, Maine. But
I actually cheated because our Zoom meeting actually says your last name there. So I was getting it right.
Yeah.
You are the, what, are you the curator of another Hole in the Head film festival? Is that what you are?
So the title of this festival that we're doing online, I am the MC host / film programmer and producer. Okay.
Programmer, that's the word I was looking for. Yeah. Curator, programmer.
So yeah. But I'm actually the on-camera host. I'm building a set in my apartment for the festival as well, as we are a live film festival.
Nice. So you're the Joe Bob Briggs of your festival.
I am the Joe Bob Briggs of my festival. And I love Joe Bob to death. I don't know if you've met Joe Bob in person, but he's quite the friendly cat. He is all he is cracked up to be. So I always want to give a good shout out to Joe Bob out there.
We haven't met Joe Bob, but we had Justin Martel, his producer for the drive-in on the show a couple months back. So, so we can Kevin Bacon ourselves to Joe Bob.
Yeah. Nice. Joe Bob.
So what is the Mr. Wholehead's Warped Dimension Film Fest? I know it's an online film festival, but what is the overall, give us the pitch, essentially.
The pitch is that we are essentially a live online only film festival that is specifically directed towards genre films. So horror, sci-fi, fantasy, just all over weird, all over the world films. But it's an offshoot of the longest running genre film festival in San Francisco, which is called Another Hole in the Head. And that was created by George Casalian Jr., who has been with the SF Indie Film Festival world for, over two decades now. So, and this festival was created out of COVID-19 because we normally will have another Hole in the Head Film Festival at a theater, an actual underground theater in San Francisco every year. But looking how now everything is in life, we all went online. And and it started actually in April. We were just doing, we started with Nightmare on Elm Street. We haven't done Nightmare on Elm Street. Night of the Living Dead and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We did like a little Zoom meeting party. And then we kind of spun off and we're like, you know what? Maybe we can make a few bucks off this. And then that's how the festival evolved into what is now going to be running September 24th to the 29th.
Yeah, it's a 6-day festival. You guys are stacked with stuff. Like it's not just like a 1-day thing. This is 6 full days of just like I'm looking at some of these titles on especially the short films you guys got, and there's some pretty crazy ones. Like seems like you guys have a lot of like short films in blocks, so and they're all titled stuff like Assorted Flavors. You have a few that are Benji's Cosmic Finds, I believe, right?
Yes, yeah. Curated the world, the ether, the internet, called a few phone calls, made a few friends, and said, yeah, these are the ones I think, from what I found, were pretty special. So,
any particular highlights you'd like to talk about?
The highlights, so, I mean, there's a lot to talk about in highlights. We have 6 days of stuff, so it's over 140 short films and features that we're going to be featuring. For like the Cosmic Finds that I curated, those specifically were the ones I programmed. I think it's really cool is the two things I kind of divided them up into. The first one on Saturday is like very much inspired by like my growing up, teenage, childhood kind of reflections, but now like brought into the digital media age. So there's a lot of things that are like very MTV, late 90s, early 2000s, but like kind of put in context. So we have like some experimental shorts that are kind of documentary a little bit. One called Snapolis that I think is a pretty interesting. If you grew up in that era of that MTV era, you'll have a kind of a interesting melancholic reflection, but also then it's mixed in with like a rotoscope short about a kid who finds a skull in the Salton Sea Desert and it talks to him for like that Salton City is a great one. So another one called Machine Wash Cold, which is essentially about a killer washing machine. That one I think is great. They actually shot that to make it look like it was like a really cheap, intentionally cheap. Like you'd see the lighting was really good, but it's like looks like a softcore porno also. So there's that. And then on Monday, the ones that I found there are like more of my international finds. Like I have stuff from Indonesia and Mexico that deal with a lot of, again, weirdly enough, about childhood. I don't know why it's a reflection on that, but I have some like this one called Mama's Little Bus Driver, which is like a twisted Mr. Rogers world about a guy who builds his own imaginary bus stop in his backyard of New Orleans. And so those guys are great. They made a feature film that's not featured in our festival this year, but I highly always want to throw that out there called Easy Does It. It's a great road comedy that's like Raising Arizona meets Easy Rider. And Matthew Paul Martinez is the star and writer of Mama's Little Bus Driver and also the star of Easy Does It. He's been a real pal these last few years since I've known him.
Awesome. I also see you guys got a lot of trauma titles.
We do.
Have you guys been working with Lloyd and all of them closely for getting a lot of this? Because you not only have the Slashing, the Final Beginning, which is pretty new. Is this the premiere of that one or?
It is the online premiere. I think it did premiere at Fantasia earlier this year. So we are excited about that. That was actually a last minute ad. Nice. Tom DiMicco, who is Lloyd's assistant, what we've been working a lot with, Tom's been a great help. He helped curate the blocks, the big trauma short block. And he got us Mutant Blast and The Slashing, The Final Beginning. And also, I don't know if you all remember the VHS Massacre documentary that Trauma produced a few years back.
Yeah.
We have the sequel to that. We'll be showing that as well. So.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that Troma's Future Filmmakers to be Reckoned With block looks awesome. With just like, because I always love seeing the short films and the filmmakers that they champion a lot. Like, remember years ago they really championed B.C. Butcher with Kansas Bowling.
Yeah.
That movie was a lot of fun. So yeah. I was excited what new filmmakers they are championing at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. You mentioned Kansas Bowling's feature film. She's a trip, we have a lot of that coming up. I don't think because I think what was Kansas like 16 when she made that movie,
She was very young. I think, 15, 16 or so, yeah.
Yeah, and I think Kato Kaelin's also in it or something. there's like a whole big, like, all these, like, you know, Diesel celebrities are in it, which is very apt to trauma. But I don't think we have any, like, 16-year-old filmmakers that I know of, like, under 18 that have made in the feature film. But I think what's really cool is that's really where the feature of trauma is that, you know, Lloyd is sort of, you know, he did Shakespeare's Shitstorm, which is the...
Yeah.
Or hashtag Shakespeare's Shitstorm. I kind of was like, should we get it? I bugged them about it. They didn't give it to us, which I understand. But I'm a huge fan of Romeo and Juliet, Toxic Avenger. I mean, these are the movies that inspired me to be a filmmaker and a film programmer, creating these worlds. I mean, we mentioned Joe Bob earlier, but Lloyd Kaufman's book, you know, things that I learned about the Toxic Avenger and how I survived them, was a book I picked up next to, you know, Truffaut and Hitchcock when I was 12 years old. So,
Or Make Your Own Damn Movie.
Make Your Own Damn Movie. You know, it's funny. I kind of came in late on that one. I don't know why. I think I was like, it came out right when I was in film school or something. I was like, I'm already making my own damn movie. Like, I think I was.
So. It was like that and The Evil Dead Companion were the ones that got me going like, oh, shit. Yeah, I could make my own movie. Yeah.
You know? Rebel Without a Crew. Robert Rodriguez's Rebel Without a Crew. That was one of mine.
Yeah, that was probably the, you know, like, high school, like, yeah, once you, for some reason, that Lloyd Kaufman book was at my school, at my school library, so it was like, I'm like, I don't think I was supposed to have it, it was like, it had nudity, and it had like, you know, like, it had like,
someone donated it, yeah. And they didn't flip through the pages before they put it on the shelves.
Yeah, they were just like, oh, this must be a filmmaking textbook or something, not knowing that there's boobs and stuff all
but
over.
Like, on the cover, he's like, his head's severed, and there's just like, you know, it's like, I'm like, who's letting your kids read this stuff? Gosh.
So. You mentioned that that this festival is like kind of born out of the need because of COVID. What? Because this is more than just showing movies in a film. I mean, it's interactive. There are chat rooms. There are polls that the audience is voting on the award winners. Is this all stuff? I mean, it's. The community of an actual in-person film fest is going to be as intact as it can be, I guess. Is this one of your objectives, you know, at creating it so interactively?
I think so. I mean, that's this big question that we have now that, like, theaters are now gone, like, this interactive, like, even though we can sit in a room with strangers, you know, for 2-3 hours and have a communal experience, we may even not talk about it. Afterwards, and then now we've actually not had that. Unless you live in Texas or something, or, you know, it's like, and so I think that's kind of comes from it. I mean, the festival itself, Another Hole in the Head, has been very like punk rock communal. There's a small group of filmmakers and film goers that go every year and create the art for it. Like, I don't know if you saw the big spider, the spaceman fighting the spider, that was created by Bob, Killer Bob, who's like a tattoo artist, and him and his crew have come every year since the last 17 years it's ran. So there's definitely this kind of thing, but I think also it's to broaden that and do like the polls and all that stuff like that is to bring in even more now an international audience kind of thing as well, because I think that's the great opportunity with it, even though there's definitely a resistance, and I understand rightfully so, against, oh gosh, an online film festival, you know, kind of thing. But in this day and age where we're trying to be socially conscious, safe, good human beings, I think we can kind of bring together that environment on that end. So
that's the only way to do it these days is online, unless you want to do it like at a drive-in.
I love the drive-in. I went to see New Mutants. The worst thing about it is it's a special kind of bad. Like, you know, there's a term, my girlfriend and I we made a joke about it when we were watching it, is that, you know how the movie, like, jumps the shark you know, like that, yeah, kind of, yeah, that coined the term, where it's like, well, now there's the demon bear that, you know, the wheels fall off, kind of thing like that. You know, and there's like, if it's got a gigantic demon bear, like, I think the movie jumped the shark somewhere. So,
well, Annihilation didn't jump the shark with its demon bear, though. That was the best part of the movie.
That is a very, but was that really a bear? What was that?
We're getting into yeah, a whole other conversation.
I'm joking. So anyways, but
we've had discussions about that bear. Yeah. It haunts all of our nightmares.
My coffee's kicking in, and when my coffee gets kicked in, it's like, you know, like it's Scarface time pretty much. The thing was, is that with the projector, is the only thing is that I forget about the drive-in. I grew up at the drive-in. I actually lived at the drive-in when I was a kid. Longer story short, but I remember if you see a movie at like 8 o'clock, you still can't see half the movie. You can hear it, but you can't really see it. And yeah, and I always remember just being like, so if it's a movie's like super dark, like, you know, you can't see anything. And so I think what's great about like the online thing is that you can actually watch the movie. Like, you don't have to, you just have to just complain about like it lagging or freezing at times. Yeah. But you can actually like communally watch a movie together. Then the drive-in's great. I shouldn't disrespect Joe Bob that way, but.
Now, is your festival going to be, and this is just me kind of breaking your balls right now, is it only going to be on a computer, or do you have an app where you can watch it on like a Roku or something like that? Because we were just talking, actually, I think it might have been before we even rolled the mics, Korea and I were talking. One thing I hate about Peacock and HBO Max is there's no freaking Roku app.
Yeah. HBO Max is weird. Yeah, it's a whole other thing. I'm a big fan of what HBO Max is trying to do. I think it's some of the great programs.
Yeah.
But streaming wise, yeah, it's a little wacky.
Well, I have HBO, so I have HBO Max.
Yeah.
But I can't watch it on my TV. I can only watch it on a computer. And that is what, unless the movie is Host, it doesn't belong on a computer. Maybe the Unfriended movies.
Well, Unsane looks good on a cell phone too, you know?
Yeah. So the thing is with the festival, we wanted to make it as like what Another Hole in the Head is represents, that festival is like this very punk rock DIY kind of style. And since essentially like, we're trying to not, you know, like, this is the first year of doing the online one, like, not to, like, super invest in, like, all kinds of, yeah, like, streamings and stuff like that, but just to be like, hey, like, let's do, like, let's put on a show kind of thing. I'll build the set. I'll Jerry Lewis the fuck out of this thing. And, you know, and you know, we'll go from there. I don't know if you remember Jerry Lewis and the marathons, which I should highlight. We have a guy who is a good friend of mine from American Genre Film Archive. He cuts together montages, clips of all TV watching from the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s. And he recently, Brett Berg's his name, he's part of Museum Home Video. And we have a special with him that he cut together called Sequelitis that's on Saturday at 5 o'clock, Saturday the 26th. And yeah,
I was going to say, I've actually been watching the Museum of Home Video's weekly Tuesday streams, and they did a Jerry Lewis marathon, a marathon of clips from the marathon. Jerry Lewis marathons.
The thing is, though, it was only 4 hours, not 24 hours of Jerry.
Yeah.
So
that'd be a bit much. Yeah.
It's awesome that you've been watching Brett's stuff, because I think that's like kind of also another like a key to streaming next is getting people like him to cut together all this amount of streaming and put them into like actual like art form kind of, you know, watching, where you don't have to sit through 24 hours of Jerry Lewis. You can sit through 4 hours of the best of Jerry Lewis, you know.
Yeah.
And it becomes like this amazing like emotional journey. Like, I was quite like I always that's what I love about Brett's work, is that you kind of get this real roller coaster ride effect with his work that he's been doing for the last over almost 2 decades probably now. He's been cutting stuff like this,
and you guys are actually doing a lot with AGFA too, because you not only have Sequelitis, but you also have Mixtape AGFA Mixtape 3 showing as well, right?
That is Sequelitis as well.
Oh, that is Sequelitis?
Sorry for the confusion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that might be a website error or something.
Oh, no,
totally...
No, that's totally my bad. I have the first two mixtapes that they put out, because they put them out and like a few other titles to download for so cheap. And that became, when I flew out to Georgia, that was my watching it on my phone downloaded.
Well, but that's kind of perfect though for stuff like that, because it's it's, you're not like watching Dune, the trailer for Dune, like on your phone, you know, where you're like, I think this is supposed to be meant to be in Dolby Digital sound. Yeah. You know, fear is ears the phone killer kind of thing. Like that, so.
What are some challenges that you guys came into with this, like with programming and like how long have you guys been like putting this together? Like it's not like you guys just came up with this the other day.
What are you talking about? This is the internet. Of course, it's the other day. It was an hour ago. Like, so it started in April. George Casselling Jr. I just like saying his full name. It's just, we just call him George. he gave me a call and saying, hey, how's it going? You know, stuff like that. Like, you know, crazy times we're living in. You think like maybe like we can get like something, like we didn't even use the term watch party. I think watch party became like a new term, like as COVID evolved. Kind of things like, oh, let's just put on like, you think like we should just like do a Zoom where like maybe like 20 people or maybe even 50 like show up and just like watch a movie? Like, do you think there's like a movie on like free, you know, copyright, that's copyright free? And I'm like, there's like Night of the Living Dead, that's copyright free. I mean, that's poor Romero never made a buck off that movie, but like, you know, it's like, I was like, we could do something like that. And he's like, yeah, let's do that. And then like, it just kind of, we just kind of kicked it together in a week or two, put it up, just did like a quick Facebook page. Another one that has a huge, again, like online community. So we kind of just piggybacked off that and emails. And then we're like, oh, cool, people are showing up. And then we're like, can we get them to donate? And then they started, you know, people started donating, you know, a couple bucks here and there. And we're like, hey, this is actually working. We have an audience. We have a community. Like, let's, you know. And then it was originally 3 days, the festival. We were going to start on 9/11. No conspiracies. There. It was going to be September 11th to the 13th. We had to push it back for some things. But then we started getting all these movies, like finding stuff over the summer. And, you know, submissions from Film Freeway. And we're like, wow, like, we have a lot of stuff. And we're like, we got to extend this. And so it went from like 3 days to 4 days. Now it's 6 days. So.
Would you say doing the festival online has allowed for greater accessibility?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think that's there. The only thing it's kind of, I think, a disservice a little bit to filmmakers is that when you have the festival, when you go to come to the festival, it's more easier to comp, you know, a filmmaker. I do agree, though it is kind of one of the controversial things I've dealt with as a filmmaker myself, and submitting and paying for all these submissions, and then finally getting into festivals and then being like told, oh, you have to pay now to see your movie or see other people's movies. And it's like, wait, like, I don't think you should, but with Zoom, the situation we have with how we set up this one, it's sort of like we can't really comp people that made this as easy as it's just sort of like, hey, you showed up, great, come on in. We have to like set up the, you know, the registration, because, you know, we did have some earlier things where we got doxed. I don't, you know, that term. That was a new term I didn't know about, where people hacked our screenings. And so we had to put in more, you know, just a trial and error thing over the months. You probably might have heard of, you know, people like drawing, you know, all kinds of, you know, ribald kind of stuff on people's like Zoom meetings before that weren't uninvited. So we had to put in security measures to put in. And so to share links and register people is a lot. It's easy on if it's just one person. Hey, pay $10. You're in. But when you get filmmakers, you're like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, like, let's see if we can get you a comp, you know, kind of thing like that. So I think as a community, as audience, it's cool. As a filmmaker, it's a little bit more of like we're still trying to figure out, trial and error kind of thing.
Plus, you're also kind of missing out on that interactive, like when you're there in person and like talking to other people, like, oh, dude, I saw your film and I'm a, you know, with hopefully distributors, but even just like talking with other filmmakers and like sticking around. I know you guys have like Q&A set up and all that, which is really awesome. But that's like you said, it's more audience oriented. So it's, yeah, I can see how that's really great for more so audiences, but it's still great as a filmmaker getting your stuff out there and getting it seen and having that potential of like the larger audience with internationally and stuff is pretty great.
Yeah, I always was telling that it was on George. It's like, you know, it's like about like filmmakers not being able to comp them. You know, it's just like, but it's such that that feeling of when you get into a festival, you're like, fuck you, mom and dad. See, I did it right. I'm worthy of this kind of thing, kind of moment. Like, sorry if I've been saying the F word. I just like to go off on stuff.
I
like
fucking
that.
Swear all the time.
Okay,
so
good. There was that awkward moment.
We tick the explicit box every week on our when we publish. So
cool, yeah.
It's nothing. No one's prepared for it.
You always know it's the first time that on that person's podcast. Like, can I swear on this? You know, it's always like they don't know these people.
It's usually just me who swears. So you're good.
Okay. I know. I'm like trying to remember. I was like, I just remember like us talking horror movies back at Amoeba back in the day. So I was like, does Korea swear? I don't know. I can't remember. We're in the music store. Everyone's swearing at somebody at some point. or if security's throwing someone down the stairs.
Jesus.
Yeah, some you know, crazy person screaming, I exist. It's like, yeah, you fucking do, bud. You gotta pull up your pants.
Sunset Boulevard.
Anyways, yeah, getting back to kind of the festival experience on that end. So yeah, I think it's as an audience, what I love the idea is that there's no excuse now for people to be like, oh, I can't make it to your movie. Or, you know, it's like, oh, I can't be there. It's in San Francisco or, you know, like we're broadcasting out. But it's like, well, no, actually, it's the Pacific Standard Time. You can register, you know, it's like, and if you can't make it, you can always donate, like kind of thing like that. Like, and I do feel like that is another thing I do miss as a filmmaker is meeting other people in festivals. And that's how you make your other movies come, like get bigger projects or get become more creative, you know, more sound, you know, develop, you know, your skills. You know, we can all learn from, you know, apps and technology, but at the same time, the human interaction, which is kind of what it is. We're learning from that trial and error kind of thing. So
now this festival's not, it's not on demand, right? There's actually a set schedule and you have to go. Okay. So there is still kind of an excuse. It's like, oh, I have my crochet class at that point, you know, but, but at least the travel isn't an excuse now.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing too, is what we did was it's a $10 pass all day. So whatever program you buy, whatever ticket you buy, it's good for the whole day. It's not like just for that one, you know, 2 hour block kind of thing. Yeah. So like Saturday and Sunday, you have like over 12 hours of material on top of me being obnoxious, like Jerry. and it's just like, I feel like it's like, why make that excuse then? Like, I guess we're not friends anymore.
That was going to be one of the things, not just as like an advertising, like, hey kids, don't forget it's only $10 a day, but seriously, $10 a day is not bad at all. Like altogether, you can see, what'd you say? It was almost like 200. It's like over 160,
140 plus something.
140 plus shorts and features for like $10 a day. That's comes out to like $60 for like 6 days of content. That's insane.
Yeah, no, like most festivals are pretty expensive in that regard. Like you could pay like hundreds and hundreds of dollars just for one weekend.
Yeah. And you got to pay for a hotel room.
Yep. And a hotel room. Yeah. And what goes on in that hotel room. And then the next movie that goes on in that hotel room to make that other movie go away. So, yeah.
For just $10 a day, you can sponsor this film festival.
For just $10. No questions asked.
We need a Sarah McLachlan song playing as we do this commercial. Oof.
It is great because, like, there is, we've been talking, especially since all this has gone down, alternatives to, like, the usual, but while still consuming new media and whatnot. And, you know, Jacob and I are big fans of what American Cinematheque is doing at Mission Tiki with their double features. But there's a lot of stuff that's popping up, too. There's other places in LA. I'm not going to name names just because, you know, I still I think it's cool what they're doing, but...
Oh, I know. I know where the bodies are buried, Korea.
We all know a few. Yeah. But there's a few things where it's just like, yeah, man, your pricing is ridiculous. I went to go look into one thing and I was like, oh, that sounds really cool. I looked at the price. I'm like, so it's going to cost me like almost $80 to do this? No. Mm. But like, dude, but, $10, like...
But Corey Feldman will be there. He will be there in person. So, don't you want to meet Corey Feldman? So, which is cool. This festival, Another Hole in the Head, I was going to when I was like just watching movies, because they always would get like the craziest films. From like, you remember a film called A Serbian Film?
Oh God!
They were legendary. Oh,
shit.
They weren't the Serbian first film. Person to show it. They were the second person and the last person to show it in a theater in the United States. So,
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, it's and I like, and George was like, oh yeah, I never saw it. People said it was crazy, and then I saw like a little bit of it. It wasn't that crazy.
It's weird because that I actually own a copy of A Serbian Film because I saw it at Fry's for like, I think it was $3.99. This one, so I'm like, oh hey, this is legendary. I've never seen it. You know, if I had to do it again, I totally would, because now the version I have that I got at Fry's for $4 sells for like $80. I'm like, yeah. I wish I had bought, there were three of them there. I wish I had bought all three of them.
You should have hoarded your Serbian films.
It was weird because I walked in not knowing anything about the film itself until like, I think the few minutes before I saw the movie, and they were saying all this content, you know, what you've heard about the movie, and like, whoa, I'm like, am I ready for something like this? And then I sat next to this, this film critic who, he was funny because he's just like the most like genteel, quiet guy. Not a weird, he's like one of the like, he's like, you're the normal people here at the festival. And he's just like, I love that movie. That movie was like a real film. And I was like, oh, I was like, if he likes it, there's something special like that about it. I was like, well, that movie was like Crank meets Boogie Nights meets, you know, like, you know, so, but it's funny. Amoeba had this thing back in the day when I used to work up at the video store there. They're like, we can't really sell it, but we'll put it like underneath like the counter, and we'll make it look like it's like contraband. Like, oh, you could totally sell it. It's like they would just always act like certain movies like Ken Park, or you know, oh, you can't sell that movie, but it's like, yeah, you can, like, you're not gonna get in trouble.
It's funny you mentioned Ken Park, because Ken Park is the closest thing to a holy grail, I think. Well, besides The Day the Clown Cried, but I've wanted to.
Jerry!
Speaking of Jerry Lewis.
Jerry! Yeah,
No, seriously. Yeah. That is on my bucket list to finally see that movie at some point. But no, Ken Park, I've never seen, and I've wanted to see it forever. And I've never actually found a copy that didn't cost like $120, which I'm not going to pay that for anything. But
The Day the clown Cried. So
just a few more years, right? I mean, what was it? Seven years?
It will be available in a few years.
It was 10 years from a few years ago. So yeah, we may only be 7 years away from it.
But I thought it was called Roberto Benigni's Life is Beautiful. What are we talking about here, everybody? I love
geez.
Roberto. Roberto is a, I don't know, Roberto's special. But but with Ken Park, Day of the Crown Clyde, I don't know why I'm blanking on some others, a Serbian film, whatever, you know, like these movies that are the under the counter, oh, like, I've seen it, but no one else has seen it kind of thing, which is kind of interesting in this day and age, like, when that changed. I think Blair Witch Project was the last of that era of, like, oh, have you seen it? Like, is it real? Is it not real? Cannibal Holocaust.
Right.
That's the other one. Cannibal Holocaust is, which I think actually Cannibal Holocaust is a great film. It's just, you know, the animal stuff is what I think is.
I think the last movie that was kind of like that was Catfish. Was it real? Is it not?
Could be. I mean,
the movie.
Also, Paranormal Activity.
I don't know if Paranormal Activity... did anybody ever actually think that was real, though? I think that ship sailed with Blair Witch.
I think a few
Witch.
People did, but not as much as Blair Witch.
Yeah.
Blair Witch.
Blair Witch people were convinced, and that was the point. That's how they sold it.
Yeah.
And there will never be another Blair Witch.
Well, I think that's where it ends, but I think it's interesting, like, the host you mentioned earlier is, like, the first time I've seen, like, people actually, like, be like, oh, I watched that, or, like, is this the new wave of horror? Is this how we're going to tell stories? You know, things like that. But I think that I'm intrigued to see that, because now we're in this era of we're all isolated as what is real, what is not real, what is fake news. You know, not to trigger that word out, that term, but that could be a catalyst for a new wave of films like Blair Witch or something that you can play around with. Catfish, I just remember Catfish was like, once you saw it, you're like, oh, it's just a documentary about a sad old lady, you know, kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's just like
Catfish could have gone. And this is the only thing that I think Catfish is fake. But I also think that if they were going to do it fake, why didn't they just take it completely dark? There's one point, and anybody who's seen it knows it's the part where they come up on the house at night. You could have taken it to some dark places right there and then, but they didn't. And that's the only thing that makes me think, OK, maybe it isn't fake, because a real, quote, filmmaker would have done something else there.
Yeah. What's interesting is the guys who made Catfish made the best Paranormal Activity movie, number 3.
Yeah. Like,
and, well, I actually think Marked Ones is really good, too, and I'm really excited for Freaky. I don't know if you guys are, but I'm really happy because Chris Langdon has talked about that movie for a long time. Trying to get that made, I think that's a great premise. I think it's the kind of movie, the horror movie we might need right now. I kind of am leery about horror comedy, but I think it's... I'm like, yeah, and I like it that, you know, Vince Vaughn's a serial killer again. So,
best part of Gus Van Sant's Psycho was Vince Vaughn.
What do you mean? What was that movie again? I don't remember that movie.
Oh, I forgot. I'm the only one that remembers that movie exists.
The best part of Gus Van Sant's Psycho was the end of the closing credits.
Were they a shot for shot closing credits as well?
Korea and I go back and forth about Gus Van Sant's Psycho. He's for, I'm against.
Yeah, I love Gus Van Sant movies, but that's the one I'm like, oh wait, that shot by Christopher Doyle, I think the best living cinematographer. And it's just shocking. It's just like all these great people. It's the story of filmmaking where all great minds came together at the peak of their abilities and made this movie that was an experiment.
it's a film school exercise.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys were in film school. It's replication. You did it with probably a scene from The Big Lebowski or something. They did it with all of Psycho. It's a film school exercise,
but with like a huge budget. You didn't make you know, that's the angry part about all of it. It's like, but
the budget went to the cast. It's with Vince Vaughn and William H. Macy. You know, yeah.
Oh, I forgot William H. Macy.
Oh yeah, he's Arbogast.
Yeah,
but as far as, okay, let's cleanse our palate with good Gus Van Sant. Elephant,
Paranoid Park. I think is
Paranoid Park is that's another good one too. And then of course Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
Not a fan? I like Good Will Hunting.
I like when Gus is directing Good Will Hunting 2 Hunting Season and Jan's on Bob Strike Back. It's not a Gus Van Sant movie at the end of the day. It's clearly a Weinstein, Affleck, Matt Damon.
It's him trying to win awards.
Yeah, it's him
going Cronenberg.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to win awards, which is fine. Hey. But yeah, but Elephant is my favorite Gus Van Sant.
My Own Private Idaho is my favorite. Like, you can't. I mean, it goes off the rails in the second half for sure. I do warn people, like, there's a very distinct style of the movie, and then it goes into the second half. But if you don't like that, then Drugstore Cowboy is the other one I say everyone should see. Just because I think the second half is even like opposite, it just builds into this amazing, well, if you're a big Wilderness Burroughs fan, like kind of thing.
The only thing I think of Drugstore Cowboy is Heather Graham is sexy even as a corpse.
Oof, that is true. Get out of my dreams and into my car. That's all I gotta say. And the Heather that wasn't allowed to be in Heather's because her mom said it was too violent. So,
yeah.
For me, she'll always be Roller Girl, because Boogie Nights, if someone held a gun to my head and said, what's your favorite movie of all time? I'd go Boogie Nights. And Roller Girl is one of the reasons.
I'm a big Burt Reynolds fan. So,
which is funny because Burt Reynolds wasn't a fan of the movie.
Even though it got an Oscar nom, he hated the movie.
This is one of the great Hollywood stories. Burt didn't hate the movie. He loved the script, and he felt like he didn't give enough to it. And then I think there was a scene that, and I've heard this from other like real like long-term actors or just getting curmudgeonly old men, is that like I've heard from this about Terrence Malick, from I think Christopher Plummer, like there was like a big scene and they really worked it up and they really like went to town and like felt like that was their best work, and then it just was on the cutting room floor and they saw it and they're just like, I gave you my heart, I gave you everything, and you, and that's it. Like,
there are some great deleted scenes from Boogie Nights, yeah, though. I mean, there's one that explains how his car gets wrecked, yep, and there's one, you know,
the shotgun.
Becky Barnett's marriage. There's some great deleted scenes. Yeah. I mean, I have this love hate with PTA because he made probably my favorite movie of all time. He made Boogie Nights, but aside from maybe Punch Drunk Love, I'm lukewarm at best on the rest of his filmography, but I love Boogie Nights. Love it.
Inherent Vice kind of merges both. I feel like every time I watch that movie, it's a different movie. So.
And the one people always get pissed at me for is I'm not a fan of There Will Be Blood.
Oh, yeah, I was about to fight you over that.
I don't even
everybody.
Think...
Phantom Thread is kind of got me back on the wagon.
I just got that one on 4K, so I'm going to be watching that soon. You know, I got to see all the details of the sewing.
I don't even think Paul Thomas Anderson's a fan of There'll Be Blood, to be honest, because it was a writing exercise, he always called it. It was like, he was stuck, and he didn't know, and I think he wanted to change tones, and I think he was just like, hey, let's go with this, and it just sort of blossomed into this, like, because I think it's a beautifully shot film. Robert Eldsworth's work is amazing in it. Daniel Plainview, there's a lot to talk about, but as a movie, again, with talking about, like, My Own Private Idaho, like, the second half of There'll Be Blood is not the first half of There'll Be Blood. It becomes a different movie.
Yeah. Boogie Nights does as well, though. I mean, it's squarely right smack in the middle, and it's all with, spoiler alert, William H. Macy's suicide, suicide. Ooh. When it transitions from the 70s to the 80s, all of a sudden it goes from good time party cocaine movie to freaking, you know, getting your ass kicked because a homophobic hustler, you know, picked you up, or, you know,
well, Tom Jane is my favorite character of that movie because I've lived my life like Tom Jane.
Just need the handlebar.
Yeah, I did have the handlebar for a while. One of my first parties I ever put on I've done some other screenings in the past, was a Boogie Nights Say Hello to LA party for me. It was that and Less Than Zero were the two that I put on.
Those are great.
But I wanted to say real quick about that. How many of you thought about that scene in the New Year's part of 2019 to 2020 and how everyone was going to say 2020 is my year? And now literally, like, maybe little Bill was right. It was time to end it all.
We all thought it was going to be our year.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Shit. I was supposed to run a marathon this year.
I know, I was in shape, and I
oh, dude,
and I have gained back every ounce that I got out
of. I was in such
of,
good yeah, shape at the so, beginning of this year. Yeah. It was gonna,
yeah, no, and now we can't even go outside to exercise.
Yeah. All the smoke, fuck.
Yeah.
We're getting into COVID stuff again, we talk about that all the time.
Yeah. Abeji, I did have another question. Yeah. Speaking of programming, like, if there was any particular events or anything that you were excited having programmed for the festival?
Yeah, so I think it depends on also your taste. I think that's what's great about the assorted flavors. It's really just a sort of like smashed in together of like, you know, hey, this is genre, this is crazy, this is weird. But the Lewd, Crude, and Occasionally Nude, I just love the title for that. That's on Saturday. That's a fun one if you like into a lot more of like what we were talking about, more extreme stuff. Like, I don't think we have like a Serbian film kind of film, but we have like movies that, you know, definitely are not for your, you know, not for your grandma. Or for your pastor.
You don't know what my film. Pastor and grandma watch.
Yeah. Oh, that little boy.
Yeah, I'm looking up some of these titles. You got Adventure Brothers, Thrift Store Shampoo, Fucking with a Robot. That is the actual name of the
It's
of
a
the
music
short.
Video, so it doesn't actually... There's no actual...
Yeah, let's see. Lobster Spouse, Flick.
Where can they find you... And more information about your festival on the webs. Where can the listeners find you?
So you can definitely go to the website at AHITH.com. Mr. Wholehead's Warped Dimension. You'll definitely see it, any connection to it on my Instagram and Twitter. My Instagram is at KidGloveKiller. You'll get a bonus if you can figure out what movie that's from. And also Twitter at Movie Hopping. I'm Benji. You'll see me around there. Anything connected probably to your podcast here, Eye on Horror, on that end. But yeah, that is it. And essentially, you can find that at the website. If you Google it, Mr. Wholehead's Warped Dimension, or another hole in the head is another thing. And tickets are $10 all day, each day. Come as much as you want, or and comment. Well, sometimes we'll have the chat on, sometimes we won't have the chat on. So, but ask questions. We have filmmakers from around the world, and you'll be hearing a lot more about it.
Awesome.
Awesome. So we'll wrap this up now. Our theme song is by Restless Spirit, so go and rock with them. And our artwork is by Chris Fisher, so go check him out. Jacob, where can they find you on the socials?
They can find me on Twitter at @JacobDavison_. That is at @JacobDavison_.
And you, Korea?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Korean Barbecue. That's CorreanBBQ.
Cool. And me, you can find on Twitter at Cinema Fierite. That's like Verite, but with fear. So it's F-E-A-R-I-T-E. And you can find all three of us at the Eye on Horror Facebook page, the Eye on Horror Twitter, the Eye Horror Facebook page, iHorror.com. And probably what we have an Insta now. We have anything Korea yeah. sets up. He's our social media guru. So wherever we're not hard to find. So,
yeah.
So yeah, come check us out. Check out the festival, Benji's Festival. And we will see you guys in a couple of weeks. So for me, James J. Edwards.
I'm Jacob Davison.
I'm Jonathan Korea.
And I'm Benji Carver.
Keep your eye on horror.